very good morning to everyone. Our first case of the morning is number 063395, Certain Underwriters against the Argonaut Insurance Company. Mr. Eaton.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tim Eaton, and I represent the appellant, Argonaut. Your Honors, the issue in this case is whether or not state law should apply. When you have an arbitration clause where the parties have 30 days to name an arbitrator and the 30th day falls on a holiday, we submit that the state law of California should apply, and under that provision, it would allow you till the next business day to name the arbitrator. Let me address two main points I believe that are very important in the time I have this morning, because obviously all of these issues have been covered in the brief. But the two points are, number one, why isn't this governed by this court's decision in Universal Reinsurance versus Allstate? And the second point I would like to make is why California law, specifically Section 11, should apply. As to the first point, Universal Reinsurance, which I believe the district court relied upon in ruling in favor of underwriters in this case, simply is not applicable. The reason is in that case, where it had a similar clause with a 30-day period in which to name an arbitrator, the party that was appealing and the party that was a petitioner below was asking the court to excuse a tardy performance because they were 3 days late and they hadn't docketed it. Under those circumstances, the court looked to the Federal Arbitration Act to determine whether or not it could excuse the conduct or do equity, as I believe Judge Grady in the district court said was necessary in that case. The court felt compelled, in fact, I think the wording of the Seventh Circuit opinion was they felt constrained to follow the Federal Arbitration Act because in that act there's a provision that where the parties have provided for an arbitrator appointment process, it shall be followed. Even though two of the three judges in the Universal case recognize that this may lead to a partial or biased panel, even though they were reluctant, and as the court is probably aware, initially they did not rule in that way. They reversed themselves in a petition for rehearing and felt that they were constrained under the FAA. This case is not a situation where someone was tardy. This case provides that on the 30th day they are to name the arbitrator, and it is silent as to what happens if that 30th day falls on a holiday. Under California law, which we believe applies, and I don't believe there's any dispute on that because in the lower court it made the decision as to California law, and that issue was determined because this is where the form was that the arbitration was to take place. It does provide that if the 30th day falls on a holiday, you have until the next business day. And in this case, the 30th day fell on a Sunday, which is defined as a holiday under California law, and the next day was Labor Day. And therefore, we had a timely appointment of an arbitrator on September 7th, which was the next business day, which was a Tuesday.
Have there been any recent California decisions on that particular section that you rely on?
Your Honor, I understand that many of the cases that we cited are old. In fact, that statute, I think, goes back to the late 1800s. We could not find any that dealt with the circumstance of a contract. But in all the cases we cited, which would logically follow, we believe, under an interpretation of Section 11, the court said even where there's a span of time, if the 30th day falls on a holiday, then you can take the act that's required on the next business day. And by the way, I think it's important to note that that act was in effect at the time that the parties entered into these agreements in 1959. These agreements span between 1959 and 1972. That act is over 100 years old. As we've cited cases, I believe one was 1911, one was 1946. And that statute is there, as it is in almost all 50 states, because where the parties do not address the issue, it's implied. Could they address it and say that if it falls on a holiday, you do not have until the next business day? Yes. Could they address it and say you do have? It would be unnecessary because the statute is implied in the contract. In fact, the statute, the wording of the heading of that statute, says certain acts not to be done on holidays. In other words, California state policy in 1872, I believe, is when the act was first enacted, said you do not do business on Sundays or holidays. And in 1959, the parties would have been aware of that statute, and I think a reasonable expectation would be you do not have to write that into the clause because the act would apply.
Street, and if I could shift your attention just a bit.
Of course.
There is a forum selection clause in this contract. What does it say, and how does that impact on your case?
Your Honor, it was noted in the district court that the forum selection clause says that if there's to be an arbitration, it would be, I believe it says, San Francisco, California. I believe that does have an impact on the case because then you would look to the law of California. I don't think it would be unreasonable for underwriters to assume that if this case was going to go forward, you would look to the forum's law to determine how the case would be handled. And in this case, the arbitration selection provision that we're relying upon is California law.
I can direct your attention, move your attention again to one other aspect of this thing. Suppose we were to disagree with you and believe that federal and not state law should apply. Is it clear that under a federal option, we could not read into that statute a holiday exemption?
You can read into that statute a holiday exemption.
Tell me a little bit about why you think that's true.
Because often when the federal law is, when there's a federal common law that the courts are looking to adopt, in adopting that federal rule of law, they often look to the states to see what the law has been. And in this case, we have 50 states, which we've cited to, that have clauses that are similar. In fact, we've even cited to an English law that has a clause which says where the business day falls on the holiday, you can go to the next business day. So I believe it would be appropriate for a federal rule of law, if federal common law were to be adopted, that they could borrow from the state's interpretation as to that.
Say there was a federal law ought to apply, but that we ought to borrow the federal rule from state law, which, as you say, is done in the majority of times.
Yes.
But in this particular instance, wouldn't that destroy the reason for choosing federal law, i.e. uniformity of practice?
Your Honor, I don't believe in this instance it would. First of all, we have Section 206, which is a provision under the Convention, which is Chapter 2 of the Act, that does allow discretion, we believe, because it said the court may appoint the arbitrator pursuant to the party's agreement. So we believe that does give them discretion under certain circumstances, and we think in this case discretion is warranted. But secondly, with respect to federal common law, if I may add, we obviously cover this in the briefs, but we believe that the uniformity cases that have been cited have dealt with situations where the parties didn't recognize that the arbitration should take place, or there was an enforcement of award. In fact, the convention itself, the title is the Convention on the Recognition and Enforcement of Arbitral Awards. So if the issue doesn't deal with recognition, and in this case there's no dispute that the parties are ready to arbitrate, or enforcement of an award, which obviously this doesn't deal with, we do not believe that there needs to be federal common law on this issue, that there's no federal interest at stake here with respect
to... If there is a federal common law, it is a federal common law that allows for what you have submitted is a universal practice of waiting till the next day.
Well, what we are... Yes, if you adopt a federal rule, Your Honor, I agree. What we think is the preferable approach is to look to the state law to determine once there's been. But I also believe that with respect to a federal rule of law that would embrace what all 50 states have done, which would be to provide for a mechanism where the appointment can be made on the next business day. And we are not asking this court, as they were in Universal, to modify the agreement. What we are stating is that where the agreement is silent, you look to the state law, in this case, which provides the answer. Or, Your Honor, if they were to adopt a federal rule of law, it would be read into the arbitration clause, which would allow you then to file the next business day.
In his brief, opposing counsel suggests that this really doesn't work in an international situation and points out that this particular holiday, for instance, would not have been celebrated in the United Kingdom and where the other party does business. How do you answer that?
Well, first of all, what you have here, Your Honor, is a company that chose to do business in the United States, issue policies that only govern disputes that arise in the United States, and secondly, chose a forum in the state of California where the arbitration was to take place. So as far as reasonable expectations, I certainly would argue that it's not unreasonable to hold them to the law of the forum that they agreed to. Secondly, I think when you're not dealing with an issue involving the recognition or enforcement of an arbitrable award, as this court has done in cases like Stone versus Dredge, I believe, which was cited below, when you're dealing with contract interpretation or what's being read into a contract, you look to state law. You do not look to a federal body of law. And I think our U.S. Supreme Court has stated time and time again that they're very reluctant to adopt a body of federal common law unless there's a federal interest at stake. And we would argue here that the only federal interest is to encourage the recognition of arbitration clauses or their enforcement, and that issue is not present here.
The rule that you've proposed is necessarily non-uniform, though, because the state laws are different as to which holidays are, in fact, recognized as state holidays.
Correct.
So what is the rule that you're proposing, that there be a federal holiday rule at federal common law? Under this statutory scheme,
Your Honor,
and it not be tied to state holidays?
Sure. Let me answer it, if I may, two ways. Number one, the rule that we would propose would be that you would look to state law to answer that question.
And that's necessarily not uniform.
Well, it would be,
because those statutes are keyed to the state holidays, not federal holidays.
Except that once you make a choice of law decision, you would look to the state that you choose, which would be California, and that is very clear that the federal holiday would apply because there's a list of holidays and Labor Day is one of them. If you were to be making a federal rule, I understand your question, then wouldn't you inherently have something that would not be uniform? And I would argue that a decision could be made with respect to a federal rule of law that would at least recognize Sundays and national holidays, as I think all those 50 states do. But I think the better approach is to look to the state law, because the state law is going to provide a clear-cut answer in each instance, as if there was an ambiguity in this clause. If there was an ambiguity and the parties were arguing over what does it mean, you would, of course, look to state law. You wouldn't be looking to a federal rule of law under those circumstances. In this case, we're not arguing that it's an ambiguity, but what we are saying is you apply the law of California, because that's the law that would apply in this case for a number of reasons, and I think the district court was correct in saying California would apply. That's where the underlying dispute arose, where the claims are based on. That's where Argonaut has their principal place of business, and that's what where the forum of the arbitration was to take place. So if you're looking at reasonable expectations, particularly in 1959, where you don't have email, you don't have faxes, you have a situation where you would be relying on the U.S. mails. Sunday there would be no mail delivery, Monday there would be no mail delivery because it's a national holiday. So I think it would be a reasonable expectation that you would look to the state law to determine when does the service have to take place of the appointment. And we certainly argue California law was very clear on that point.
Mr. Eaton, this is sort of an ancillary issue, but what's the amount Argonaut was seeking to recover from the
Your Honor, I believe it was like $15 million. It's a sizable amount, sizable claim. And of course, we've never gotten to that arbitration once this dispute arose. The other factor that I think is important to mention in Universal, it was clear there from the court's opinion that they believed time was of the essence. And so under those circumstances, because Allstate had made a demand and said that we're not going to agree to any extensions. You need to make your disclosure on time. And under those circumstances, I think the court, plus the fact that it had the 30-day provision in there, said, we can't give any wiggle room here. That is not this case. What we are saying is that the clause allows us to appoint on the next business day. We're not asking for an excuse. We're not asking for equity. We're asking you to apply the law of the state of California, which certainly should have been a reasonable expectation of the underwriters at that time. Save the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Mr. Eden, you've eaten into your rebuttal time answering our questions, so I'm going to give you an extra 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
You just about used your time, and Mr. Balsam will give you an extra 3 minutes as well here.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. With all respect to my learned opponent, we've just heard a very elaborate and complicated argument that ignores certain on-point case law. So much is undisputed in this case. There's no question that this was an arbitration agreement entered that was the product of an arm's-length transaction entered between sophisticated commercial parties. There's no question about the meaning of the provision requiring Argonaut to appoint an arbitrator within 30 days of London underwriter's request, and that if Argonaut did not comply, then underwriters would get to pick the second arbitrator. There's no question that Argonaut did not appoint an arbitrator within 30 days, and no reason is offered for its failure to do so. Mr. Eaton says that this is not a case of tardy performance, but it seems very much like a case of tardy performance when any time after August 6th they could have appointed their own arbitrator. They had an entire month to do so, and no reason is offered for their failure. In these circumstances, this case, in our opinion, is controlled by Universal Reinsurance, which had the exact same arbitration provision. There, like here, one of the parties failed to appoint an arbitrator within 30 days. It was it was 2 or 3 days. They missed the deadline by that point. And there, like here, the parties in their contract specified exactly what would happen if the party did not name an arbitrator within 30 days, and that's that the other party gets to pick the arbitrator for it. The court in Universal Reinsurance dealt with the time of the essence issue. The court said that if the parties had bothered to put this provision in there about the 30 days, then they must have considered time to be of the essence. And I would argue that the exact same principles controlled. The court enforced the contract as written, as consistent with the expectation of the parties.
Well, the argument is that the distinction here is that there was no issue in the Universal case about application of a time-counting rule.
Yes, Judge
that
Sykes.
Would exclude Sundays and holidays.
I understand that. That's correct. But we have another case that I didn't even hear mentioned, which was Swiss Bank versus Dresser Industries, where this court addressed that very issue, and that fills this gap completely. In that case, as the court will recall, that case involved a warrant to Seventh Circuit case involved a warrant to buy some stock, and that warrant expired on April 5th. April 5th was Good Friday, and Swiss Bank tried to execute the warrant on the following Monday, and this court refused to enforce it. And the rationale was quite broad. It was not because banks are open on Good Friday or anything about the mail. It was that the wheels of commerce do not grind to a halt on Sundays and holidays. And it would, in the court's word, inject substantial and gratuitous uncertainty into the performance of contracts to read a holidays exception into every contractual deadline. I would submit that that's especially so in international commerce, where, as the court has already pointed out, in England, the first Monday in September is not a legal holiday. My client was open for business on that day. The point, Your Honors, of both Universal Re and Swiss Bank is that sophisticated commercial entities are free to put Sundays or holidays exceptions into their contracts. Here, they did not. They could have, but they didn't. And there's a larger issue here, and that is that arbitration is supposed to be quick, it's supposed to be inexpensive, it's supposed to be private. And we submit that those goals would be thwarted if, in order to relieve a party of its negligence, the court starts reading into unambiguous contracts exceptions that the parties could well have provided for but did not. The parties here did provide for the eventuality that one might not name an arbitrator within 30 days. The parties provided what the consequence of that would be, and as in universal reinsurance, the court should simply enforce the contract as written.
Oh, your opposing counsel today stressed the fact that courts have been really loath to adopt a federal common law approach to things, that outside of when the rights and the liabilities of the United States government are at stake, it's a very rare day. He also stressed that if we use a federal rule, that federal rule more often than not is really just derived from state law. Why should we not follow those two maxims in this case, and is there really any authority outside of the ones you've cited for our doing so?
Well, I would say that the only party that has a lack of authority on this issue is Argonaut. Argonaut has not cited a single case where state law governs the interpretation of an international arbitration agreement under the convention. There's a reason for that. As the U.S. Supreme Court has said, the United States ratified the convention to provide United States citizens with predictable and consistent enforcement of arbitral contracts in foreign courts. And as the flip side of that, there's a reciprocity involved in this treaty, and that also means that foreign parties must likewise receive predictable and consistent enforcement of arbitration agreements in American courts. And in our brief at pages 11 and 12, we cited numerous federal courts of appeal that have held that this uniformity requirement is carried out by applying federal law to the interpretation of international arbitration agreements. It reduces local variations in the law. Now, Argonaut says that these cases only involve enforcement or recognition of arbitration awards, but that, Your Honors, is not correct. Those cases involve a variety of issues, involve removal, involves remand, waiver of the right to remove, appealability. Those cases involve a panoply of issues where the courts have held that federal law must apply as a part of our country's enforcement of this international treaty. It would be a very strange, and then there's universal reinsurance itself. That case involved a domestic arbitration, and yet if you search that opinion for any citation of state law, you're going to come up empty-handed, because the court there applied only federal law to this the very issue that's before the court. Now, I submit that it would be a very strange anomaly if federal law applied to a case involving a domestic arbitration, but state law somehow applies to a case that enforces a federal treaty. It just makes no sense. There's no authority for it, and there is authority for the fact that federal law applies here. And to comment briefly on this argument about federal common law, yes, federal common law is rare, but as Argonaut even admits, federal common law applies not only when the United States is a party, but also when there's an identifiable federal interest at stake. And here, this case involves the enforcement of a foreign treaty. Chapter 2 of the FAA incorporates the convention, this convention, which is a treaty involving 65 signatory nations. So I would submit that federal law applies as stated in Dresser Industries, and federal law applies as stated in universal reinsurance. That is the federal common law that this court should look to decide this case, and not these elaborate arguments about state law in an effort to just avoid the application of these two cases, which is all that is. Now, another theme in Argonaut's argument is bias and unfairness. And Mr. Eaton talked about that footnote. That footnote of the two concurring judges in international reinsurance ends by saying, but that is a matter that the parties have contracted, and that is why the court came out the way it did. It's a matter of private contract. But in any event, bias is not inherent in this system. 3-0 arbitration decisions are not unheard of in this country. There's no evidence that Lewis, which is the arbitrator that underwriters appointed on Argonaut's behalf, is biased. And if during the arbitration, there should be some evidence of that. There's a remedy for that under the Federal Arbitration Act, which is Section 10, which provides that an award may be vacated on the basis of partiality if there's evidence that this arbitrator is biased. In any event, this was still a matter, if these issues were so important to Argonaut, there's nothing stopped it from naming its arbitrator on any day before September 5th, 2004. It had an entire month to do so. It did not do so. And this court should not read in exceptions into an unambiguous contract in order to relieve it from its own neglect. That's all that's being asked here. It will inject uncertainty into arbitration contracts. It will have parties running to court to read other exceptions in when they miss a deadline. These arbitrations are supposed to be fast, speedy, inexpensive, and private. And by making disputes over these issues, all of those goals are thwarted. Now, that's all that I had planned to talk about. If there's any other questions the court had?
I gather not. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Eaton, you have about 3 minutes, am I correct, for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me address Universal again. Universal did not address state law because there was not an issue of interpretation or the application of state law to that clause. What Universal was asking this court to do was excuse its performance under the agreement. And because of that, this court looked to the Federal Arbitration Act to determine whether or not it could excuse performance, and the answer was there, no. We are not asking for this court to excuse our performance. What we are asking this court to do is recognize that applied to a clause like this, which under California law, there is an opportunity then to go to the next business day to appoint the arbitrator, because under California law, that provision says we can't take any action on that Sunday or a holiday. And so if state law applies, then you read into the contract that statute. I do not believe that that is going to affect uniformity issues, because the federal interest, again, in all of the cases cited by counsel in his brief, deals with situations where an arbitration clause was not being recognized or not being enforced. What we have here is an issue of whether state law can interpret a contract or whether state law will, you look to state law to determine how to apply it. That's the issue here.
Why does that make any difference? I mean, the other circuits to have addressed the question of whether federal law or state law applies to the interpretation of an arbitration clause under the convention have held that the federal interest is strong and must be recognized and have decided the issue against you and have applied federal law to the interpretation of an arbitration clause under the convention where the convention applies. So why does it make any difference that this deals with a time counting rule and the other cases dealt with other issues of interpretation?
Your Honor, this court has held in Stone versus Drudge, which we had cited below, that when state law issues are involved in terms of contract interpretation, you look to the state law, and that was an arbitration case.
That's not under the convention.
Well, I agree, but
that's
under
where it's a domestic arbitration.
The cases under the convention have all dealt with issues that involve recognition of whether the clause would apply.
Yeah, you've said that, but my question is, why should that make any difference? Because those cases involved questions of how to interpret the arbitration agreement, as does this case.
Well, it deals with the parties' expectations in entering into the agreement, Your Honor. And at the time the agreement was entered into, there was no need to have a clause that says that you could not appoint on a Sunday or you get to the next business day, because at the time the law implied that into the agreement. And I think that's an important point here.
Well, there was no choice of law provision in this agreement.
No, I understand. I understand. There was a form clause, but you look to the analysis that the district court applied this to a choice of law, you come up with California. And I do not think it's unreasonable to apply a state law to a party who has entered into agreements here in the United States where it only deals with domestic disputes in a form that they have agreed to abide by, to apply that state law to an interpretation or an application to that clause. And that's what we're dealing with here. If you do not adopt a federal rule, but even a federal rule, it seems to me, should look to all 50 states and what was commonly recognized as an exception to the 30-day application. And Swiss Bank simply does not apply because that was an issue of interpretation of Delaware law, and the court didn't know how to get from Good Friday to Monday because there was a Saturday, and that wasn't even addressed under Delaware law. So I think that's certainly distinguishable. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Eaton. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel for their excellent arguments today and for the fine briefs they submitted on this difficult question. The case will be taken under advisement.